Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hello, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, the podcast where I interview startup founders who have successfully raised capital. So today with me is Nick Jassett of Shepherd, coming out of Boston. Hello, Nick. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Great to be on the show.
So what is Shepherd, and why did you start this business?
Shepherd is the modern school bus. We basically take K through 12 students with a consistent fleet of school bus certified SUVs to and from their after school programs and school. We got this business started basically out of a big research project we were doing at InMotion Ventures, which is Jaguar Land Rover's VC group. Really recognized that there was a hole in the market for a ride service for kids that was both trusted and available. And we thought we had a unique way to go and solve that hole.
Yeah, cool. That's a cool idea. I've got school age kids and I totally get the pain points there. We had a new nanny start yesterday and she didn't have a license. And it was a big mess, and she had to pick up our kid from school. So, get the pain point.
Sorry to hear that.
So how much have you raised? And angel, VC, friends and family, give us a little color on that.
Yeah. So far we've raised just over $1 million in capital through two distinct rounds of financing. We've been fortunate so far to work with exclusively one VC group, which keeps the cap table really light. Our initial round of pre-seed capital is just a few $100,000 from InMotion Ventures, really just to get out and prove the concept. And then in September of this year, we had really strong traction over the summer and certainly in the month of September, as you'd imagine when school got started, enough for InMotion Ventures to double down and give us another $1 million of financing, which we just had a press release on a month ago or so.
Yeah, really, that's cool. That's exciting. I'm assuming you're leasing these vehicles. Like $1 million doesn't buy too many cars, too many SUVs. Is that the model?
Yeah, so it should be at some point. Basically understanding how we develop an asset-based model, which is traditionally capital-intensive, into something that can scale is certainly a big part of our solve here. So working with an OEM like Jaguar Land Rover gives us the ability to, through a number of means, lower the operating costs of running those vehicles. So you can think about discounts on the vehicles. You can think about favorable financing terms for certainly a company with no net income as a startup and not 3 years of operating capital or operating history. It's difficult to go out and get a traditional loan for vehicles. So having a partner like Jaguar Land Rover really enables us to even give this a run at all.
Yeah, that's cool. You mentioned their SUVs. Is it Jaguar's new SUV, which I think is one of the most beautiful ones on the market? Are these kids?
I'm sure they'd be happy to hear. I think they'd be happy to hear you say it. The I-Pace, right? The electric one?
I think so, yeah. I've just been noticing them in our hood, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful cars.
Yeah, no, they are super nice. We've run everything so far through Land Rover's LR4 model. And starting in March of 2018, we'll be running the new version of that model, which is called the Discovery. So we're really excited about those vehicles. There's a lot of features baked in that are going to be neat for us to have. And being able to work once again directly with the OEM, we can order these vehicles to spec and not necessarily have to deal with just what rolls off the dealer's lot.
So you have a strategic investor as your primary and sole capital source. How does that impact when you think about going out to raise more money? I mean, you probably can't hit BMW Ventures, can you? Or I mean, I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Yeah.
No, that's a great question. And certainly something that we thought about from day one. And ultimately, this is a business that needs to stand on its own two feet. And having Land Rover as an investor, having a strategic as an investor can definitely help us get there, but it's not the end all be all of what we're trying to do. So we've been very cautious in our investment documents to ensure that we're not tying ourselves to that one OEM and really pinpointing one path forward for the business. So we do have the ability to go to, if it was BMW Ventures, for example, and get them involved. That's certainly something that we could, that's on the table for us. And it's also something that, your regular institutional VCs, are going to want to dig into a bit more. And in a lot of cases, as we just described from an asset finance perspective, it's really neat and great to have him on as a partner. It just comes down to, how those terms roll out when you look to raise your next round and you look to bring somebody else in. But generally speaking, it's definitely done more for us so far, opened more doors than it has closed others.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And, to the extent you're willing to share, because I'm sure people would be interested who are thinking about having a strategic investor, did you, have to negotiate away any like right of first refusal for, thinking ahead towards the exit? Was there any stuff you had to wrestle with?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, look, in any of those negotiations, you have to basically find common ground between what's going to properly incentivize the management team and what's going to give the returns that those folks need. And when you have a strategic investor involved, you add another sort of bottom line, which is what's right for the strategic player. I think there's, we could go on every point we had to negotiate, but I think generally speaking, we were able to reach an outcome that satisfied everyone's needs and every bottom line, which is certainly not an easy thing to do. It's not trivial, but it's the reason we have the opportunity to go out and give Shepherd a good run.
That's cool. So are you in the Boston market? And then I guess kind of what are your future plans? Do you raise another round and expand into other markets, or, kind of what's the big picture strategy?
Yeah. So what we're trying to do here is pretty distinct from what other ride sharing companies in our space, being sort of the K-12 or the student transportation space, are trying to do. More specifically, all of Shepherd's rides are pooled with other students. And for us, it means that our economics depend on having density in a particular geography. If we were to spread ourselves too thin, that pooling aspect becomes very difficult to execute at scale. So for Shepherd, what our focus is on at the moment, and certainly through this round of financing, is really in owning our own backyard, if you will. So we focus even more micro than the Boston metro market. We actually focus on one suburb outside of Boston, which is called Newton. And what we're trying to do is really gain adequate market share in that particular geography, so that each new ride request that comes into our system actually slots into an existing route that we might already be running. And that's when you can really start to see improvements in gross profit and really the makings of a scalable enterprise. What we'll be looking to do probably in September of this coming year is raise another round of financing, maybe three or four times the size of the one we just raised. And we'll be using that capital to really, really button up what we've established as an ironclad model in the Newton market, and also begin to take it to the next couple geographies, next couple similar demographically oriented markets outside of big cities, certainly in the Northeast, and sort of run both markets in parallel, allow the Newton market to sort of swell and become what it needs to in the Boston metro area, while also launching perhaps Westchester or Greenwich, Connecticut, or something else like you might imagine.
Or at least most ride sharing startups out there have raised massive amounts of money. Do you think that's your path as well, as assuming this progressive rollout and proof points continue? Is this a huge?
Yeah. No, look, you're absolutely right. There's been no shortage of capital thrown in the space, and a lot of folks, we don't have to name names, are running on really big war chests that allow them to really explore all facets of their economic model without being, burdened by making a profit, for example. And so far, their investors have, they've worked with those lines. Being a smaller company, working in a space that's somewhat saturated from a capital invested perspective, I don't think we're going to have the same sort of fortuitous investment environment. I think we're going to have to earn our one of the first players in the space. And sort of, in our market, certainly one of the first adopting this and employing a different model. But things are a bit different for us. Additionally, we need to be really measured about our growth. A bad story for, a company like Uber or Lyft, it only does so much to their brand. And, you go online and see how many things have gone wrong for them. And, they're still kicking around. It really doesn't seem to affect them that much. In a business like Shepherd, though, we're taking on a family's most precious cargo. And, one of the things that could be an easy sort of, death spiral for us would be growing too quickly, losing sight of our operational metrics, and allowing something bad to happen. So, you know, we are making sure that our expansion is really tapered by delivering a consistently solid service to and safe service to all of our customers. So we, you know, we will be raising capital for sure, but certainly not on the scale that some other folks have. And we hope to be proving ourselves with each step in a meaningful way so that, you know, we're not going out with a $100 million raise on a barely proven concept.
Yeah, no, it's that's logical. I don't remember the name. I feel like there was a ride sharing targeting K through 12 startups out here in San Francisco that I think may have disappeared already. I could be wrong about this, but does that impact, you know, how you have to tell the story and raise money? I mean, it's certainly people are probably going to point that out.
Oh, 100%. You know, and I think when you walk into a room with investors, understanding who's around the table and their level of sophistication with the space, the very specific space that you're operating in, goes a long way. So with certain groups, it's definitely something you want to get ahead of and say, hey, look, you're probably familiar with the group out west that you might be thinking of is Shuttle. They had raised just over $10 million. And when we were at InMotion, we actually had the opportunity to speak with the founders of that company or the former founders of that company and kind of get their sense on what they were trying, what went wrong, and why they ultimately had to close up. But, you know, when you're talking to an investor that's very, you know, very invested in the space, you know, not just from a capital perspective, but just from an interest perspective, you want to get right ahead of that and say, look, this is where those folks broke their sword. And this is where Shepherd has the opportunity to differentiate. And this is what we're trying.
So, you know, before doing this, you worked in the venture group. So how does that change how you approach raising money, finding investors, pitching investors, or does it change anything?
That's a great question. And I'm not sure how many folks in sort of the founder CEO position have had my background. And I don't know how I would think about doing this if I hadn't. So rewinding a step back behind venture, I worked in investment banking for a bit where we were literally just every day focused on raising capital for companies. And so there was a process that we went through, which was pretty defined, in which you build a market map of the potential investors that might be interested. You try to identify what would make them interested, and you sort of laid out who the contacts would be. And then you started, dialing for dollars or figuring out ways that you could get a network connection into a particular firm. And that's really the process that we can employ here. And I can't really think about any other way that we might do it. So it's hard. I don't really have anything to compare that against. It's obviously been influenced by my professional experience so far and how you actually go out and raise capital. But so far we haven't really had the need to go through that process because InMotion has been such a good partner for us so far.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good approach, actually. How will you build that market map? Like what tools will you use? How will you identify the right investors to put on that map? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, great question. So there's loads of ways that you can do it. And generally speaking, like you want to throw everything into the funnel that you can and then disqualify rather than like having really, really tight criteria for who makes it on the list at first. You never know, there's strategy changes that happen all the time. And I'd rather reach out to somebody and get a no than not reach out to somebody who would have been a yes. So the methods that we'll employ to build that list, start with looking at folks who have made investments in the space already. So, there's press releases typically on your competitors. Take a look at who's been investing in them. Then you want to find folks who are similar to those guys. So going on LinkedIn, for example, and putting in a particular venture capital group's name, you might see on the bottom right of the screen, hey, people who looked at this VC group also looked at these other VC groups. You can play that game for a while and get some good names to go on. Having a nice network of, your advisory group, right? They're folks who tend to maintain connections depending on how you built up that group in the space. Asking them who they know, asking them who they can get you introductions to is a great way to build up that list. Then you want to go through and start tiering it, saying, these are the folks who are higher priority. This is when we want to reach out to them, making sure you've got a deck that's solid, and really, really tells a story. And sometimes it's good to get, the inbound's great, but if you're going to start reaching out, you want to, take your misses on the folks who you think might not be so interested to start out with, or maybe just are low probability. That way you can learn a bit more about how to refine your pitch and refine your approach. By the time you're talking to sort of your high priority or most likely groups, you have something that's, you know, that's really been refined by a couple of failures.
Oh, that's great. All that great advice, all of it. That's really nice tactical stuff to do. I like the LinkedIn hack there of, you know, plugging in one of your targets and seeing who else, other people they viewed. I like that. That's a great approach. You know, so I guess, when will you start raising? I think you mentioned this fall, September probably is the next time to go about it. When will you start preparing, or when will you start building that list, right? If you're targeting September, when do you start thinking about fundraising?
Yeah. So we've sort of been passively collecting names for that list, you know, since we got started, and folks have reached out to us, which is great, but you really can't rely on inbound to, you know, inbound cannot be your funding strategy. So we've already got a pretty decent list up, and, you know, now we're in the process of tiering it and letting sort of a drip feed in, but the bulk, you know, sort of the 80% of the work has already been done on that list. You know, in order to raise capital by September, we really need to be heavy in the market 6 months before then. You know, we're trying to be conservative in our approach here. We have capital to last us substantially longer than September. So if we do have to call an audible late in the game, you know, there's still the opportunity for us to, you know, to stay afloat, and we're not relying on that September date as sort of a drop dead date if we can't raise funds. So really being, trying to be proactive about raising capital and about your timeline and allowing for, you know, 6 months from the moment I think I need money, to the time we'll probably get it, is it tends to be a good strategy. And then, you know, the other thing that we employ, which I think is a great tactic, is you want to make this, like any other process, as close to paint by numbers as possible. Every VC that we meet with, we ask them, you know, what KPIs are going to be most important for them when we reach back out in 1 month or 2 months time. And, you know, we want to tell them about all the great progress we've been having. It comes a lot better if we can focus them on the KPIs they've already asked for. So certain VCs are hyper-focused on growth, for example, and if we can go to them and say, look, we had 50 customers last time we spoke to you, and now we have 150, and this is our, you know, cost to acquire and long-term value. Certain other VCs are really focused on stickiness, you know, and for us to walk to them and say, look, this is our, you know, average rides per user per month on our platform, and, you know, this is how that's trended for these customers over time. So really being able to kind of sing the hymn that VC wants to hear,
yeah,
you know, is gonna help you out big time, and they're happy to share, right? They want to put capital to work, and they want to see you be successful. And, you know, often it might be some KPI that you really should be focusing on as a business that you know, maybe didn't give enough credit to.
Sing the hymn that they want to hear. That's probably the subtitle there for this podcast. That's great. So that's great, and I think it's also interesting. You mentioned kind of, you know, 6 months lead time, which I think a lot of people don't really factor that it's going to take that long, and they need to kind of get started probably sooner than later, right? That's a very interesting data point. Do you know how many you have on your list, like roughly?
I would say high double digits.
Gotcha. Yep.
So, you know, it's a good size list. You know, it's a combination of like shotgun and sniper rifle approaches, right? Like it's both top down and bottom up. You really just want to make sure you cover the wall, you know, and you have to be sensitive about, you know, as CEO, certainly you can't be dedicating 100% of your time to fundraising, and you have to be building the product. You have to be managing your team and a number of other, you know, of other requirements on your time. But, you know, it is a critical thing, certainly for a company of our size and nature and growth stage. You know, you have to be raising capital. So you just want to make sure that no one falls through the cracks. If there's someone out there that would have led you around and, you know, you didn't put them on your list, you know, that's shame on you. So it's definitely a tough thing to sort of sit there and decide the trade-offs between, do I spend more time raising capital or do I spend more time building the product? But, you know, it's something that everyone has to come to terms with, I guess, for their own business and their own growth and, you know, what they need to do to raise capital.
You mentioned your advisors, leaning on your advisors. Do you have a formal advisory board, or is this more, you know, an informal group of advisors?
So we have an advisory board in the sense that there are folks to whom we've given some equity in the company to give them some skin in the game and keep them interested. And we tend to rely on them on sort of a, you know, we're struggling with issue X, can you please help out? More so than, you know, we have a defined time. you know, every quarter the entire group meets and we decide on things. We're probably entering that phase now where it might make sense to do that. But so far, you know, we've really focused our advisory group in a couple technical areas that our team maybe didn't have expertise, or, you know, it wasn't worth it for us to hire that expertise because we wouldn't use it every day. So, for example, you know, we don't really have a formal CTO, but we do have a chief technical advisor. And when we're really struggling with something on the tech side, we just give them a call and say, hey, can you help us out with X? The board that we have is not an executive board. So they don't have, you know, sort of there's no voting or anything like that. But we really do count on them for business critical decisions. It's just a lot more out of, you know, we really respect their opinion than it is out of, you know, they can sort of wave their hand and get their way.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And when it comes to fundraising, will you simply be kind of leaning on them to open up their Rolodex or for making introductions, or will you take it any further than that? I mean, other hacks or ways to leverage the board, especially for raising capital?
Yeah, I mean, what we'll do is, and we've already started to do this, is we share that list of, you know, maybe there's 70 investors on that list. We share it with our advisors and say, hey, do you know anybody at these firms? And if they do, then they can make an introduction. That's fantastic. You know, if they do and it's a second degree or third degree on LinkedIn, you know, we ask them to help us out there. You know, and that's, I don't know if that's really a hack, but you have to look at all the resources you have and use them effectively. And then there's cases where no one on the advisory board knows anybody. And that's when you've got to make a cold call or, you know, kind of just continue to see, you know, what you can do to get in there. You know, also, obviously, they help contribute to that list. So there might be a VC that didn't show up on, you know, your LinkedIn search or on, you know, using PitchBook or any other tool that you might have out there and just Googling like investors interested in space X. You know, also looking at, by the way, trade shows, conferences for VCs, looking at their attendee list and then just looking up what their investment thesis is and seeing if you might be a fit. That's another great way. But, you know, some people fall through the cracks and asking your advisors, like, who is not on this list of 70 that should be? You know, maybe someone should be higher priority. You know, what do you guys think? So, yeah, that's something that we ask anybody who all of our advisors are supposed to look at that list and give us their feedback on who we should be looking at and how we can get in the door.
Yeah, cool. We've already covered a lot of stuff, a lot of tips, a lot of approaches, techniques. Is there any other final piece of advice you would give, earnest young founder raising their first outside capital?
Honestly, the best advice that I could give, it comes down to singing the hymn that investors want to hear. Really just get out in the market as early as you can and keep in contact as often as you can. You know, ask them, like, is this a space you're interested in? Are you interested in the way that we're solving it? And if you are, what do you need to see from a traction perspective? And then, you know, hit them in a week or a month. Like, let those really strongly influence what metrics your whole company is trying to hit. And that way, when you go back to them, you can say, look, we're doing it. And if you continue to sort of hit the metrics that they've asked for, it's going to be hard for them to say no to that deal. And, you know, make sure you're not just letting one VC sort of, you know, have the tail wag the dog on that front. Get opinions from a bunch of different VCs and you know, keep all your eggs in a few different baskets. You know, diversify who you're talking to, but know what they all want to hear.
It's great advice. I think that's a great way to end this. I appreciate it, and I hope you, you know, have a great continued success and expansion plans. And I'll be looking for it when it comes to San Francisco. Start with the Presidio, which is where I live. So let's start with that area, and then we can expand out from there. And there's a lot of investors in the Presidio. So, you know, I'm sure there's like Peter Thiel has his fund and there's a whole bunch of VCs that have their offices in the Presidio. So that's my recommendation to you. Start in my backyard. Anyway. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having us on the show. Really appreciate it.
Good luck with Shepherd. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.